It's been a snowy, blustery, and cold winter here in the Midwest, but spring officially arrives in less than a week. With a few warm days under our belt, getting outside and into the garden is on the minds of a lot of people. Shane Cultra knows. He's a fifth-generation nurseryman out at Country Arbors Nursery in Urbana. They receive lots of visitors anxious to get outdoors and get started planting and working in the yard last weekend. Cultra joins me today on Focus to talk about getting started in the garden after a long winter. We're also here to answer your questions about starting seeds, taking care of fruit trees and berry bushes, or whatever else is on your minds. I'm Lisa Brault, and today on Focus, the topic is gardening. Food, flowers, we're all ears. Join our conversation. Email us at will-talk@illinois.edu or give us a call today at 1-800-222-9455. That's coming up on Focus after this news. Good morning. I'm Lisa Brault. I'm sitting in today for Jim Meadows. Welcome to Focus. Today on the show, we're covering early spring gardening and preparing for garden season. It's been a long, cold, snowy winter, and with the recent warmer weather, we'll just pretend it didn't snow earlier this week. Folks are ready to get outside and start growing things. My guest today is Shane Cultra. He's a fifth-generation nurseryman. His family has run Country Arbors in Anarga and Urbana, Illinois since 1865, and he also appears occasionally on WILL-TV's Mid-American Gardener to answer questions about gardening and to lend his expertise. We're happy to have him with us on the show today because the first day of spring is next week, and the weather forecast is looking up. So listeners, what are your gardening questions as we prepare for the new season? Is there something you've always wanted to try but you're not sure how to start? Did something not work for you last year that you'd like to try again this year, but maybe with some guidance? Do you have questions about what kind of tools are necessary to start gardening? We're ready to take your calls today at 1-800-222-9455, or you can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu with your questions or comments. And of course, you can also ask your questions via social media. We're on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. Shane Cultra, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us today. So the first thing I'd like to talk about is the winter that we're coming out of. How does a winter like the one we've experienced affect perennials and fruit trees?
Well, you know, it was exceptionally cold this year. We always forget how cold it is until it actually gets cold. So every year we come out of winter, it seems like the coldest winter we've ever had. But it really was this winter. But the positive was we got some snow in a very timely manner, in the fact that when we got these super frozen times or super cold times where it got to negative 50 wind chill, we had just received a snow. So all the plants had a blanket over them. So it really timed out well. If we wouldn't have gotten that snow, there could have been heavy losses because our zone is really down to negative 20, negative 30, and we got there. So a lot of these people that are pushing the envelope and getting these things they see in the magazines that aren't quite good for Illinois would have paid the piper.
Right.
But it worked out pretty well. So
what about trees? I mean, do you think we'll see a loss in fruit trees? I'm thinking of peaches, like peaches.
Yeah, and the edibles, I think where the big losses are going to be are rabbit damage. Rabbits, when the snow is covering everything, their favorite bark and food are the bark of fruit trees. And so there's damage everywhere. We're already getting calls. We got calls all winter. When people walk out in that snow, they're going to see all this. The bark removed. The rabbits ate it to nothing.
Wow.
That's going to be huge.
I had no idea they did that.
Oh, that's their favorite. Yeah, if you have a fruit tree or blueberries or any edibles, even a crab apple, which is now more ornamental than fruit, they'll eat it completely around.
So when you're talking to people now, what are their biggest concerns that might not make it?
Well, mostly it's the evergreens, because evergreens, they don't lose their leaves, so they need to breathe, and that wind that we've had is really hard on a plant. So they're burnt. A lot of evergreens have burnt off, and there's a really easy way to protect that. It's called an anti-desiccant. The brand name you'll see is Wiltproof, mm-hmm. And you spray it. It forms a wax, and if you do that before the winter, you won't have any problems. But they didn't, so now they're calling and saying, oh, they look really bad. And evergreens, when they look bad, they don't really come around. It's not something that goes bad and then comes,
It doesn't bounce
yeah,
back.
No, because when it has a leaf, it can just drop a leaf and form a new one. Evergreens are not going to really grow that many more needles in that same spot.
So does that kill the tree?
A lot of times it maims it enough that it's going to be ugly on that side. So it's going to be healthy and it could live in the wild forever. But you want it to screen or look a certain way, and it won't ever look the same way.
Right. Okay. So personal anecdote here.
Yeah.
So on the advice of a friend, there's a long and involved story here, but last fall I planted garlic after having a very unsuccessful harvest the year before. So I planted it at the right time. I mulched the ever-living heck out of it with straw. And then I thought, okay, maybe it's time to go check. And my friend was like, yeah, you should go check. And I went back to check thinking, because this person said, well, maybe, you know, if you go down there, maybe something's happening.
Yeah.
It was still frozen solid. Underneath all that mulch, the ground was still frozen solid. And now I have concerns.
No, that's perfect. If you want to preserve something, there's no better way than to freeze it.
Okay.
That's when we take food, we put it in the freezer. And so we can bring it back out. That's what you've done. That's actually a very good thing. It's much worse to go hot, cold, hot, cold, hot, cold. Again, think of it as your food. You don't want your food to go hot, cold, back and forth. If it stays cold, you'll be fine. So I think you're going to have great luck with it. I really do.
And also asparagus, which I know
same
the crowns
thing
are really deep anyway. Yeah. How deep did the ground freeze this year?
I don't know if you really want to hear it, but there were spots that it was more than 3 feet.
What?
Which was a record. Yeah, more than 3 feet. Now, it's right now, it hit, last week or 2 weeks ago, it had gotten up to 15 inches. A little rain goes a long way. So it was only 15 inches, and now it's probably less than 10. But I only know this because I had a friend that had sewer damage, and the sewer guy said, I can't help you. I can't dig. I can't do anything. So he had a broken sewer for over a month.
And oh, man.
That's, you know, having bad garlic's one thing, but having a broken sewer is a whole nother level.
My problem just got a lot smaller.
Exactly.
So. Okay. If you are out there listening and you have questions or comments for Shane Cultra about the upcoming garden season, give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. You can send us an email at will-talk@illinois.edu. Or you can find us at Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. We would love to hear from you there as well. And I will I'll take a question from social media, from Facebook. I have a friend who wanted to ask this question about compost. She says, we've been collecting it for years, but haven't started a vegetable garden yet. We would like to do one this year. Should we be mixing it with anything before putting it down? It looks pretty much like dirt, but how do we know it's ready?
Yeah, that's a good sign. Once it starts to look like dirt, then you know it's ready to go. You know, if she put all the right organic things in it, then as long as it has that texture, that's what you're looking for. You want it to break down to a light, airy soil, and then it's ready to go. Fresh compost obviously doesn't break down quite as easy. So once you get it to that level, it should work in just great. You know, you can till it in or handfuls at a time. You know, she's done a good job. She's put enough time into it, sounds like.
Now, what if you're a lucky person who's come into chicken manure or horse manure or other types of manure? You know, something has to happen to that compost. You can't just put it on there straight
The urine in it can burn really bad, so you have to let it age. And depending on the manure, chicken tends to age a little faster because it's smaller. Horse manure takes a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
But horse manure, I like to see at least 2 years. I don't even like to use it the next year. Just depends on how it breaks down. But adding a little peat moss to it or adding some grass clippings and adding other things to help it break down, that'll make it go a little faster. And it's fantastic. Sheep is really good. Our favorite is worm castings, which is, you know, it takes a while. I don't know if you've ever seen a worm use a bathroom, but it's not a lot of stuff. So it takes quite a while. But we buy it in 2,000-pound totes,
mm-hmm.
and we work that into everything. So we love our manures. Our mushroom compost has mushroom compost and also horse manure in it. But you do have to wait. And we get calls all the time. Hey, I have a horse farm. I'd love to get rid of some of this. And that you can take advantage of that, but you do have to be patient.
Okay. Thanks to Joy for her question. I hope that answer helps you out. So what are some things that, you know, we're still kind of in that nether period. It's not quite spring. We have some nice days, but still really wet. What kind of things can we do right now, even though it's cold and wet? What do you think?
It's cleanup time. This is really the best time to go out there and clean up that garden. The leaves that had diseases last year, they need to be cleaned up. So if you had foliar problems and they're still laying there, get rid of those. Those are going to add to new problems this year. We have people that have apple scab on their leaves for their fruit trees, and they're saying, oh, I've got a disease, it's coming back. Well, it's in the leaves, it's not in the tree. So getting rid of and cleaning all that, the perfect time to do that. Take a warm day, a little pruning, they're starting to bud out, you can see what's alive and what's not. So you want to make sure and go out there and prune some things, not that's going to flower, you want to enjoy those flowers, but things, just take them down a little bit, see what's leafing out, shape them up a little bit. This is a great time to do that.
Are people starting to see signs of life in their gardens
yet?
The
buds are swelling. I don't know if anybody else is going out there besides me, but you know, it just so happens the warmest days we've had in the area have been also the windiest. Mm-hmm. So last Friday we got 60, but it's 30-mile-an-hour winds. And we're going to get the same today.
Right.
But it's still, if you can sneak out there and look, you'll see the buds are swelling on all the trees, on the pears and the magnolias. So yes, we are going to survive the winter.
I will confess that I have a little kitchen garden just off our back stoop, so it's very close to the house, and I saw chives starting to come. So it is.
That's the first thing. Weeds and chives come first.
Exactly. So what about seed starting? Is it too late to start seeds indoors?
No, it's still a good time. And again, as long as they've come up, it's never too late. You know, you don't have to have a finished seed to take out. It's going to be tender in the ground or it's going to be tender inside. You just have to make sure, you know, inside, if you're going to go through the effort and buy the lights and everything, you do kind of want to take it through. But yeah, you're still plenty of time. Still plenty of time.
So for somebody who's considering starting seeds, you know, some questions that I've heard or read in the past have to do with when you're starting the seeds, you're in your basement and you've got a shelf, do the seeds need to stay warm? Do they need to stay covered? Do the lights need to be on all the time, or can you set a timer and have it on at certain times?
Yeah, there's certainly, there is an art to growing good seeds, and it does depend on the crop, but a heat mat always advances things. You can buy an inexpensive heat mat. You don't necessarily have to have it, but it does make things go faster. Also, watering. People aren't sure really how to water. They tend to always keep it wet. And it's good to keep it moist, but you need to let things dry out. Roots develop through going dry and wet. And so you need to watch that process. It's not sitting in water. And then in the light, you just don't want to keep it inside too long. It gets real lanky and your tomatoes are growing along the ground because you started too early. But that's just antsy. You know, everybody wants to get out there and get things started earlier. But yeah, definitely a heat mat helps out a lot. And then light, the amount of light. People forget you don't need the light until it's germinated, until it's out of the ground. And I see these lights on all night, and I think it's not even out of the ground yet.
Right.
But everybody's really excited to get out there.
Sure. So once it germinates, do the lights need to be on all the time at first?
It helps. Again, it speeds the process. Usually in a basement, there's not enough natural light. So yes, you're going to need to be in that 15 hours of light, a long day. Think about how long it is in the summer, and that's what you're mm-hmm. trying to duplicate. So yes, a light certainly helps. And then getting the right bulb. You can buy grow lamps now at any of the major places and get that going. And those aren't expensive at all. It'll probably cost you $25 to have a grow light nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So say someone has been industrious in their basement ahead of the season. They've started some seeds. Let's talk a little bit about, or if they've had a cold frame, which is another way of starting seeds. Let's talk a little bit about when will it be time to plant outside? I know in my neighborhood, there's always a sort of unspoken contest about having the earliest tomato.
Who gets it out there?
Right. And sometimes with disastrous results, depending on the season. And I know different plants have different times when they need to be planted out. So describe how what people have to do.
As far as the timing, you really have to watch those night frosts. Now, the cool season, we know the broccolis and the lettuce. You can essentially put those out almost any time if you could work the soil. You just can't work the soil quite yet. But as long as we're not getting on those crops, as long as we're not getting it 20 and below, which we are now, but that's going to change. You can almost start those any time. I mean, it's pushing a little bit because we can still get some cold, but you could play with fire a little bit and work those. The other ones, you know, April, you can do it. Mother's Day is really, that's the old wait till mm-hmm. Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. But it has come into play last year where we got a late season cold and a lot of people got hit. So, but usually third week in April, you know, 2 years ago in March, we were 80 degrees and everybody sailed all the way through. But usually the third or fourth week in April, you can start. I start putting stuff out, and mm-hmm. I always tell people, if you mess up, you can always buy your way into having the biggest tomato, because you know we'll have 2 gallon tomatoes to put in the middle of May. So anybody that missed something, and then the new key I like to talk about is grafted tomatoes. The new taking the most disease resistant rootstock and adding the most productive top, and mm-hmm. they graft them together, mm-hmm. and we're seeing tomatoes that are getting. You know, it's natural. There's no chemicals involved. You're just putting them together and tying them together. But you're getting 50, 60 pounds per plant from one plant, and you can plant them in places you've had problems before. So there's all kinds of ways to beat your neighbors when it comes to vegetables.
So, but in order to do that, your plants have to live through the transfer from indoors to outdoors. So how do we manage that best?
Well, I've noticed that our customers seem to play a numbers game. So they plant. Yesterday, a lady came and did 125 plants. I think she's going to need 5, maybe 10. So she's just doing a pure numbers game.
This is tomatoes?
Tomatoes.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm sure there's other things in there too, but generally, you just watching the water is the key. You know, light, you do have to keep it from being lanky, but overwatering kills much more. We lose 10 times more plants to overwatering than we do underwatering. So keeping the water management, the diseases, we don't see a tremendous amount of diseases other than from water. We don't see insects in your basement. That doesn't really come into play so much in the spring.
Right.
But yeah, it's timing, and then water management is really what we see the biggest problems.
Mm. And one thing I like to remind myself of is if I mess something up, I can try again.
Yeah.
And it's not really,
absolutely.
It just no one likes to see their effort, you know.
No, yeah, but that's you try and do it yourself, and then if it doesn't work, what's the worst case scenario? You have to pay $1.95 and go buy a tomato.
Exactly. So we would like to hear from some folks if you've got a question or comment about preparing for the upcoming garden season. Maybe you're trying to figure out what to plant and where to plant it. Maybe you have a question about pests. We'd love to hear from you at 1-800-222-9455 or at will-talk@illinois.edu if you prefer email or social media. We're on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. And we have a question from Facebook about fruit tree planting. Jacqueline asks, we want to plant fruit trees this spring, but haven't prepped the ground the season before. Is there so much advantage in the long-term health of the tree that we should wait another year and do that first? Or if the soil is already decent, can we go ahead and plant with little potential health of the tree lost? And my addendum is when is a good time to plant a fruit tree?
Yeah, you can prepare the soil as you're planting it. You know, to prepare the soil properly, you want to prepare all the soil where the roots are going to grow. And that's quite a huge area. So most people don't ever get to the point where they're going to do 18 square feet for one tree. But you can dig the hole wider. You can add compost. You can make the soil where it's supposed to grow better. The old school method, my grandfather and dad, it was the plants are on their own. They're going to have to get used to the soil that they're there. Don't do anything. And they seem to have good success. But my generation has been, hey, why not try and give it a little help? Why not give it some compost and give it some nutrients and work the soil up? As far as when, we always shoot for April 1st. Starting April 1st on, you're usually able to get into the soil, work the soil up, get the tree in. It can experience spring, get some spring rains. And then no matter when you plant, summer, you're going to have to water it and maintain it. July, August, September are the times that plants struggle. It's just hot and dry. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so, you know, people say, well, can you plant in July? Absolutely, because it's now in a container or a balled in burlap. If you plant it in April or you plant it in July, you still have to maintain it in July.
Right.
So you've only lost a little time. You haven't lost, you know, it's not a bad time to plant.
So you mentioned, say we planted last year and now in the early spring, you mentioned pruning earlier. I think that's something that terrifies a lot of people because you're cutting off, you know, growth. Isn't growth
well,
good?
Well, and everybody tells you, oh, you can do this so wrong. You don't want to completely butcher the tree.
So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I always tell people the goal of your pruning is to build a solid foundation on fruit trees, especially to hold fruit. These long, lanky branches are going to hit the ground and they're going to break. So use that common knowledge going into it. And secondly, you want it to develop a nice leader, the top branch being the leader. That's what's going to be the future of the tree. So you want that to go straight up and down, and you don't want competing. You don't want, you know, I always call it the hand of God. You don't want five fingers pointing upwards all fighting to be that next branch. So you have to thin those out and trim that leader till where it's one, and that becomes a candelabra type look. That's what you're shooting for. You want these strong branches coming out, and you want them to not crisscross. You want them all to go out, and you want it to go up, up and out. That's the basic concept of pruning a fruit tree. You'll see in a magazine, they'll say dip in, prevent disease, and dip it in. That's true, but there is some practicality. We all, you know, you do want to clean your pruners. You do want to do disease prevention. You do want to watch your angle of your cuts. But the reality is you're trying to create this tree that's up and out and strong for the fruit.
But this time of year is the preferred time to do the pruning.
This is a good time. We do some midwinter. Like March is perfect, but we'll do a little, you know, we'll do a little bit. You just don't want to do it when the sap is pumping. That's the key. You don't want to do when it's becoming a new tree and growing mm-hmm. new leaves, and not when it's pumping straight down, when it's ending the season and doing that. So avoid that sap moving up and down.
So I have a question, another personal anecdote. So a couple of years ago, we have a decent sized backyard, but for trees, it was going to be difficult. So we planted them against our garage mm-hmm. to espalier the trees.
Exactly.
And then never espaliered them. So we planted them when they were basically sticks. Yeah. You know how you get trees.
Which would have been a perfect time to espalier.
Right, of course. And life got in the way and it never happened. Of course, now the trees are huge. I've never pruned them. I feel so bad admitting this on the radio in front of you. But now this year we want to do it because the trees are starting to get kind of large. We had fruit last year for the first time. You know, we planted them 3 years ago.
Maybe. Oh, yeah.
So how can we start with a tree that's already 3 years old, prune it down, and start training the branches, even though it's not a little baby tree anymore?
Yeah, you need flexible branches to do that. So you'll have to decide whether the branches that are there are flexible enough to get that look. If they are not, you can trim those branches off and start with new branches. By trimming that tree back hard, you'll still get these nice new young branches. Mm-hmm. You're kind of stepping back in time. But you can still start over. Their hard pruning is okay for fruit trees. So take the flexible branches and use those as your espalier. Mm-hmm. And the ones that are too big and hard, just take them all the way back to the trunk mm-hmm. and kind of start over. And yeah, you'll be just fine. 3 years is not too bad. If it's 8, 9 years,
right.
It was going to be a little more difficult.
But right.
You'll be surprised how well it'll come back. And people are afraid to hack is the word on their plants. Plants are very resilient, much more resilient than people give them credit for. They're not resilient when they're young and you don't water them in your yard, but they're very resilient once they've established a root system. They can take a lot of stress, but you know, the less stress you give them, the less disease they'll get and the faster they'll grow. But they are pretty resilient. You have to make some effort to kill a plant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When is it too late to move a fruit tree? Like
age? That depends on the temperature, but generally it's really more, you can move a tree anytime. It's not the age, it's the time of year. You have to put a root system on it that is reflective of the top of the plant. And as it gets big, it's just not doable. But when it's younger, you can move in March and even early April trees the whole time, any size, as long as you can put a root ball on them. And we do. And evergreens, you can move again in August mm-hmm. because they go mm-hmm. dormant in the middle of the summer because it's so hot. So that gives you a little more season. But trees are generally till first or second week of April and then again in the fall.
Okay. We have a caller. Antonia from Champaign is on line 4. Antonia, you are on Focus. What's your question?
Thank you. I have a question about climbing rose bushes. We have some maybe 60-year-old climbing rose bushes. They were built in the neighborhood. I mean, they were put in when the homes were built, and a lot of them continue to thrive. They have kind of petered out, and they're blooming over the last 10 years, and I began feeding them, but I'm wary about pruning them. Is there a basic tenet to that?
Yeah, and an older one, it's better to probably thin them out, is to take 25% of the rose back. Sometimes I have to look at them, but just don't be afraid to take some of that rose back. It does have to support itself, and the longer and the bigger it is, the harder it gets to provide the nutrients and provide the water. So it's okay to trim the roses back. You probably want the length because it's doing something or covering something, but it doesn't have to always be that thick. So if you take some of that out, you're still, you know, if two branches are against each other, it'll look just as thick if you take one out because it'll leaf out and cover that area. Because when things are shaded, there's no leaves. So take one of those out. The other one should leaf out. And I think you'll see an improved vigor in the plant. And fertilization's huge. They need every year, even twice a year, feeding. Roses are the heaviest feeders in the plant industry. Hmm. They're just...
Okay, What do you recommend to feed roses? Just your regular commercial rose bush food?
That's usually pretty good. I like a slow release. There's all kinds of slow release products called Osmocote, Nutricote. That would work as well. So you can use your rose food and a little bit of slow release fertilizer to give you an entire season of fertilization, whereas rose food tends to be more at that particular time. And I don't think you'll hurt it by over-fertilization if you use a slow release, because it does just give little amounts. So I would use both. And again, okay, the Osmocote and Nutricote and Multicote, it seems to have a coat in the name if it's a slow release.
Okay. One more question. Is there a good time of year to prune these roses?
This is the perfect time. So as soon as you see in the next couple weeks, you're going to start seeing leaf growth. Anything that doesn't have any new growth, go ahead and take that out. It's dead. It's just in the way. Anything that does have new growth, then you can work on that and start trimming it back. But this is an absolute perfect time over the next 2 or 3 weeks.
And when you say trim all the way down to the root stock?
If you want to thin it up, you can take it all the way back, but you're going to have to obviously pull the whole line out there, or the whole stem that you've trimmed off. You can trim it down halfway up per branch. You can take the whole branch off. You can take pieces of it. Just you want to thin it back, you know, throughout the plant, and then remove that stem.
All right. Thanks so much for your question, Antonia. Appreciate it. Since we're talking about bushes and still talking about pruning, Laura has a question from Facebook. She needs help growing berry bushes. So do I, frankly. She's wondering about the best non-chemical soil enhancements that are needed, good companion plants for them. Companion planting is also a question I've seen quite a bit. Really, just anything to get them to grow. She has failed 2 years running, she says.
Soil preparation in berries is huge. If you'll ever go to a berry farm, you'll notice they always have a very sandy soil. They want a really light medium so they can grow and get water but not sit in water. So that's the key, is prepare with a sandy mixture, well-drained soil. Two rabbits love, especially blueberries. Blueberries are one of their favorite foods in the world, so you have to prepare that. When it comes to organic, it's usually pretty easy. You can't use aluminum on blueberries. You want it acidic. You can only use ammonium sulfate. Aluminum is poisonous and toxic to blueberries. So ammonium sulfate is something that's great for blueberries. And then, your general fertilizers, there's lots of great organic products now. Fox Farms is a brand that's really, really good that has a berry formulation. So Fox Farms is really good. Amazing thing, and it's kind of odd, but the Colorado market has driven organic because of the recent marijuana laws, and because it's now financially viable to produce these great organic fertilizers, it's moved into the garden industry, and it's kind of come across, and Fox Farm is one of them. The horticultural growers of marijuana loved Fox Farm. Everything was organic, and everything was producing so well, and the farmer said, well, that should work on berries, and it has. It's been an amazing product, and you're seeing more and more organic products that have come from that industry but work just as well on all the things we're eating. So you're going to see all the marine life coming in, the sea kelp and the worm castings and all these coming in. So you really can get a great berry organic fertilizer easily now.
Is there anything that can be planted with berry plants that helps them grow more or deters rabbits?
There's nothing really that actually makes them grow faster that I know of. As far as deterring rabbits, there is a great product that is made. It's called Rabbit Scram. It's an organic spread. Most of the people that sell repellents, really, they just don't work all that well. But the Scram line, I will say, because it's a concentrated blood meal, works great. 30 days, they don't touch anything that you spread it around. Mm-hmm. And Rabbit Scram, they do Vole Scram and Mole Scram, and it's been very positive. So, you know, to keep those off, that's really half your battle. I mean, just growing it's one, but it's even worse when you've grown it and then the rabbits take it down to nothing.
So. Right. Thanks for your question, Laura. We'll take another call. Maureen from Champaign is on line one. Go ahead, Maureen. You're on Focus.
Hi. I have a backyard that faces north, but it's quite deep, and I am looking for a little more shade. So I'm looking to plant 2 shade trees. I have a ranch home, so I'm really not looking for like an 80-foot tree out there, something that I can that will grow fairly quickly.
Yeah, that's the hardest part of finding a tree that grows quickly but yet stays small and is long-lived, because the quicker it grows, the shorter lived. But in your case, because you do want some shade, you actually could probably go with an ornamental tree. In the fact, because an ornamental, even a newer crab apple, that the new crab apples are less disease, you know, less disease problems, but they get 20 to 25 feet tall. So you can still get shade from it at 20 to 25 feet, but you don't have a, but and it gets flowers as well. So you can get kind of the best of both worlds. It's as a shade tree, no, but a shade tree tends to be 30 to 40 feet tall. There are some smaller maples, Acer Genala hedge maples and Amur maples that would be very nice, a paper bark maple. But again, in that 20 to 30, if you want something faster growing, it'll be more in the ornamental crab, ornamental tree, flowering tree, some lilacs, things of that nature. So I would look towards more ornamental and take advantage of the shade, because at 20, 25, it's still a big tree and provide quite a bit of shade.
All right. Thanks to Maureen for her question. If you're out there listening and you have a question or a comment for Shane Cultra about the upcoming garden season, give us a call, 1-800-222-9455. You can send an email at will-talk@illinois.edu, or you can find us, of course, at Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. We would love to hear from you there. I would like to shift the conversation a little bit to tools and building. So let's talk a little bit about building raised beds. I actually, ahead of this interview, I had some questions from people, like, ask him to talk about building raised beds and how do I do that, and how much dirt do they take and how much wood do they take. Can you help?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the biggest trend in gardening right now. Every year it gets bigger and bigger, but last year especially, I bet you we had 40 people talk about raised beds. The hardest part's building the bed. It's not real difficult, but there's some labor involved. We don't use railroad ties anymore with creosote and all those, so don't even consider that. If somebody's friendly and gives you railroad ties, say no thank you. So you're going to want to go to more lumber, and treated lumber should not hurt your vegetables. If you don't use treated lumber, your efforts will only last a year or two. So you just make sure you get a safe treated lumber, build it. And you build it to your waist. Build it to where you bend over. Everybody's different. A lot. It used to be we would build these for disabled people. People in wheelchairs still want a garden, but they can't get to the ground. So we would build them at the arm of the wheelchair and then let them come out in the chair. And I would suggest you do the same. Where's your hips? Where you bend over? Get it to a level that you feel comfortable with. At that point, there is a million different ways of filling it, and everybody has their different idea of how to do it. But generally, we go about 2/3 black soil, good black soil, and 1/3 compost, which in our compost has peat moss and all the other things. So we go about 2/3 because it still has some good heavy soil, and then it has that rich compost to lighten it up. But it is great, especially for older people, especially for people that feel their soil is so bad that they can never get it worked up.
Right.
And so a raised bed makes sense. It does take a little bit of work to build it. It's not like Legos. It takes some work.
As someone who has about 8 raised beds in the backyard, I'm very familiar with that. So what other structures can be built for the garden ahead of the season?
Well, I think a little greenhouse is pretty neat. If you take a little 2-post and then buy a piece of PVC, you can make little hoop houses. And get a piece of plastic so you can actually build your own little greenhouse out in the backyard and grow your vegetables 3 weeks earlier. I know a person that's has been growing them all winter using the same thing, and he actually plugged in a little heater and put it in there. So he's been getting lettuce every day recently. So, it probably costs more to put the little heater out there, but we're not doing this because we're trying to save money really in vegetables. We want to grow our own crops and have a little fun. And so a little hoop house is a really good way of doing it. Putting these out, and I don't know if you've ever seen a water wall. There's actually it's a little piece of plastic that you fill with water and then wrap it around your tomatoes, and it collects the sunlight and then keeps it warm all night and gives you another 3 weeks. And they call those water walls. So you can have those little things out there. Of course, if you're lucky enough to have a greenhouse out there, if you can get somebody to finance that for you, that's always very nice. But yeah, that's a little structure. And then, of course, it's endless when it comes to gazebos and all those kind of things, just beautiful structures out there. Functional, sometimes they're functional, sometimes they're just pretty. That's everybody's different opinion on what's nice. But you can always work those into a little garden bench, practical.
Right. Real quick, related. So what should people be doing to their tools or with their tools now to prepare for the season?
Well, if you're like most people, you had plenty of time over the winter to take them in the basement and get them cleaned up. But in reality, you're getting to them now. You pull them out. Sharp, to me, is the most important.
Mm-hmm.
You work twice as hard with a dull tool. So putting a little lubricant on there. I spray Pam on mine because I like when I dig, nothing sticks to it. So I just spray them down with Pam, and then getting a nice sharp edge on all our shovels is by far the best thing. And then find them. That's the other
thing.
We leave them outside or in the garage somewhere.
Or we think we put them in a really organized place in the garage and then can't find them.
Yeah, greasing up all the hand tools. And locating them seems to be the hardest part of it. But once you have them, it's just a matter of getting them sharp.
So we do have a question from email. Jim emailed in and says that he likes a tart tomato taste like the old Better Boy. And he's wondering if you have recommendations for some of the newer high-producing hybrids.
As far as a tart, I'll have to be honest. I don't know my tart tomatoes very well at all. All the tomatoes that I grow, and at the nursery we have some, I'm sure, but everything I grow is either a slicer or a little one I can pick off and put in my salad.
Mm-hmm.
I grow
mm-hmm.
tons of those. But tart, I don't do, so I'm not personally knowledgeable of them. Now, the girls at the nursery who grow the 50 or 60 varieties can tell you every single bit outside of the range.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I don't have the answer.
Okay.
I can get you sweet all the way home.
Well, thank you to Jim for the question.
So
do you grow personally at home? Do you have a lot of
The one thing that I've always struggled with is when you own a nursery and a garden center and you work 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, do you come home and work in the yard? And I have to admit, there had been a period of 5 years I just didn't want to do it. I have a beautiful yard. I have beautiful ponds and all of this nice stuff. But the last thing I wanted to do is come home. But last year, I decided I really want a vegetable garden. I want to be able to go and get tomatoes. And I'm addicted to sugar snap peas. I eat a bag of sugar snap peas 365 days a year. So I decided I'm going to grow that. So yes, and I also am practical. It needs to be outside your door for me. And I planted a fruit tree that's a columnar, so it only gets about 3 feet wide and 10 feet tall, so I can put it in my back door and go get apples. So I'm trying to utilize an area close to my back door and grow my own fruit. I mean, that's what I wanted to do. So yes, I do grow it, but I hadn't before. But strawberries, anything sweet, as I said before, I grow lots of sweet. And again, I'm so addicted to sweet tomatoes and sugar snap peas that I have to grow enough because there's not enough anywhere I have to supply my own food.
Well, and it's so nice to be able to just go outside your back door and just get a snack and take it with you, really. It's all portable way. So we just got a couple minutes left, and I saved this question for last. This is another online question from Facebook from Amy, who just left this: garden squirrel deterrents that will not get you shunned by neighbors or arrested, please. And you can include rabbits here since we've talked quite a bit about
those are the best, unfortunately. Squirrels are the last animal that there is no working repellent. I'll start that out by anybody that says that they have something that works is not truthful, because it would be a $100 million industry for squirrels. So squirrels are very difficult. The one thing I have found that I have to do for bulbs are I have to plant the bulbs and put chicken wire over the top and then mulch, because that keeps them from digging them up because they can't get at them. As far as the sprays do not work. They just don't work. And everything else that does work, where you hear hair and that's a one-time ordeal. After one time, they figure out that
cayenne pepper.
Yeah, exactly.
Tried that. And burnt some plants in the process, too.
Yeah.
If it rains, you have to do it again.
Yeah, just for squirrels, there is no repellent. Nobody wants to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
But there is, other than, live trapping, and that's not even an option. You're not allowed to take them anywhere. So all you're doing is, hey, I got you, and don't do it again. It's shaming them. That's about it. And I live in Stone Creek in Urbana, and I have the only two squirrels in the entire neighborhood.
Of course.
And at this point, they're well-behaved, but I understand everybody else's frustration. I've watched them chew the siding and chew, not eating the bird food, but chewing the bird food feeder down to nothing. So, Yeah, there is nothing out there. Everybody will give me advice, but if there's a commercially viable product, I will be the first guy to recommend it and sell it. But at this point, we've tried 10 of them and none of them work. Mm-hmm. Longer than a week.
So 15 seconds. Anything for rabbits?
Rabbit scram is amazing.
Okay.
It's natural. It works for 30 days. It covers 1,200 square feet for $20. It's a miracle. The sprays and the thing that smell like a latrine, they stopped working. Mm-hmm. Animals have realized that that's not going to stop them. Right now, blood meal in a concentrated form is by far the best.
Okay. We'll have to wrap it up there. Shane Cultura, thank you so much for your time and your expertise today. It's been terrific. Thank you.
I'd love to do it again sometime.
Great. Thank you so much. I'm Lisa Braltz. I'm sitting in for Jim Meadows. We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, I'll talk with Scott Cameron, WILL's Director of News and Public Affairs, and Lindsay Moon, producer of Focus, about upcoming changes to the show. The show will be moving to a Fridays-only slot until its return to daily shows in January 2015. Don't go away. This is Focus on WILL AM 580. Welcome back to Focus. I'm Lisa Braltz, sitting in today for Jim Meadows. Earlier this week, WILL announced that Focus will become a weekly show airing on Fridays, but that's just for the rest of 2014. The show will be back as a daily, locally produced show in January 2015. I'm joined right now by WILL's News and Public Affairs Director, Scott Cameron, and Focus's producer, Lindsay Moon. Scott, Lindsay, welcome to Focus.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you. It's kind of weird to be on my own show.
Thanks for joining me today, both of you. So we've been hearing all week during Focus that the show is going to a weekly program. Why is that happening?
Yeah, and I think you nailed it in the introduction here that this is, the one thing I really want people to know, this is temporary. That come January, that local daily program will be back in January. And I mean, I'll start. There's a whole bunch of reasons, and Lindsay can talk about some. I'll start off with probably the most straightforward. We need to identify a permanent host. We've heard a series of people as interim hosts going back for about 2 years now. It's time that we identify a host that can be in that chair every day and present the show that people expect and want to hear and that covers the issues that people care about that are relevant to people's lives. And it's going to take time. That process will just take some time. And there are all sorts of other reasons. Lindsay, I'll let you pick that up there.
Yeah. So moving forward with the show, it's important to take some time to think about the next 30 years. The way we communicate is changing. And so for a long time, Focus has been an incredibly strong call-in program. Moving forward, people don't talk a lot on the phone. And so we're trying to figure out ways that interaction and the call-in aspect of the show can continue to live for the future. And so we'll be experimenting with using different forms of social media as a part of the show, and also finding other ways people can communicate with us via, different sorts of mediums. And so we need time to kind of experiment with some of that and figure out where a presence is going to work in our community for this show.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in doing this, why is it necessary to scale back the number of on-air broadcasts for this to happen? Why is that important?
There is an incredible amount of work that goes on behind the scenes for every single Focus broadcast. So for every show that you hear on the air and for every guest that you hear on the air, someone has spent time researching that person, who they are, what they talk about, what their research is about, and has spent time also talking with them on the phone. So for every time you heard Jim Meadows talk with someone on the air, I had talked with that person before the show. And so producing an hour a day is more than a full-time job. And so in order to have time to do some thoughtful strategic planning for the future of the show, we just need some more time to think through some of those things. And that is a really important part about moving forward with the show, is we want these decisions to be strategic and very thoughtful.
So these Friday shows, how will having that time for production maybe change the show?
You're going to be hearing more elements as a part of the show. So lately, we started using music underneath the billboard. The very first minute of the show every day, introducing what we're going to talk about, there's music underneath that now. That's something we started doing this summer. Recently, you've also heard the voices of the people who are going to be guests on the show in that first minute. There are little production elements that make a show sound so much better, but they do take time. You'll be hearing more of those sorts of things as we have more time to work on them.
And just to jump in for a minute, it does, anytime you try to build something, and that's what we're doing, we're building on the success of this show. This is good. This will still be the Focus program where you interact, you hear topics that you really care about. You hear stories of people who are down the street or another town over who are experiencing the same things you are. And as you build something, that takes time. So what we're saying is, as these next 9 months come about, we're going to be looking into what are those topics that people really care deeply about around here? Who are the people who might play a role in doing that? We also want to hear from listeners and hear what some of those issues are that they're thinking about. We want to do the research and see how the fact is things are changing to digital, that, you know, more people listen online, more people listen mobile right now. There's a ground shift there. So we want to be able to reach those audiences. We try to keep this show around for the next 30 years and, again, build on kind of that legacy that we've seen for a long time. So that's another message I think is really important, that people know that this is a building process based on a long history of success.
And that long history of success, just to say one more thing, Focus as it was, it's not going to be versus Focus as what it is going to be in the future. David Inge was an incredible host, and I enjoy listening back to some of those shows and do a lot of driving and listen to some of them. And so all of that history will inform moving forward. We're not losing sight of what Focus really is at its core. And so if you're listening and there's something about this show that you've loved for the last 30 years or even for the last few years, get in touch with us and let us know, because it's only through knowing what you value as a part of the audience that we're going to be able to keep those things a part of the show moving forward.
So I am sitting in as a guest host today, but Jim Meadows has been in the hot seat, so to speak, for a little over a year now as the interim host. What happens to him during this period?
Jim is ready to get back to his day job, frankly. He's done a great job for the past year hosting, taking on new topics. I think he really enjoyed stepping into this new challenge for him. He is also ready to step. He is our senior reporter in the newsroom here, and that job is ready and waiting for him to return.
Shifting gears a little bit. So, Scott, instead of hearing Focus Monday through Thursday, we'll be hearing NPR's program Tell Me More. What can we expect out of that show, and how did you choose that one?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really neat program. And thinking about what people listen to and what I listen to and what, you know, Focus listeners want at 10 o'clock in the morning, we wanted something that brought in that same kind of depth and experience of a longer-form conversation. Tell Me More, it's not a call-in show, but it is that longer form, let's talk deep about a topic, let's pick out things that are interesting to people, let's hear voices you're not hearing in other places. Michelle Martin is the host of this show, and she's going to bring on people who you're not going to hear on three other shows that day. She's going to ask them tough questions and get responses that you'd want to know if you were sitting down with somebody. She has some regular segments that focus on issues of faith, issues of family, issues of difference, whether those be gender, ethnicity, all sorts of things. So the conversations that I find that we have here in our community are the same conversations that she often has on her show. And I think she's going to add a lot to our programming here and to the service that we provide and that listeners expect here in our community.
So, Lindsay, what can we expect out of the Friday shows? Do you have anything interesting or special in the works?
I'm so happy you asked. I could talk about some of the really exciting ideas we've got for Focus moving forward until everyone's eyes glaze over. But I think that it's really exciting. Here in a couple of weeks, you're going to be hearing a program about telemedicine and some of the ways that healthcare providers are trying to expand access, specifically for mental health services using telepsychiatry. So instead of going to see a doctor in person, you sit down in front of a computer screen and Skype with that person or connect with them via screen and talk over the internet for your appointment. And so we'll be looking into some of the reasons why that's a service that's necessary in some parts of rural central Illinois. And we'll also talk about some of the nuances. Approaching the topic, I was thinking, why would you ever want to talk to a doctor on a computer screen? And after talking with a few folks who have been involved in treating patients that way, they've said, you know, sometimes this is actually better. And so we'll talk about that. We're also interested in following up on the conversation about Chancellor Phyllis Wise and some of the racism that happened earlier this winter on Twitter. So we're interested in following up on that and maybe doing some sort of program where people can attend and be part of that conversation. So we'll be looking into that and lots more exciting things. If you have ideas for shows, we are on Twitter at Focus580. You can also send email to focus@illinois.edu. So
you sound like a producer with a plan.
I think so. We're prepared with a strategy, and I'm really excited to get started.
Is there anything else as we wrap it up here that either of you would like to add?
I'm glad you mentioned the word strategy there, because that really is what this is. This has been something that's been in the works for some time here. I started in July and was part of a larger picture look at what we do and how we do it here and how we can be even more relevant in the community, focus in on stories and storytelling in new ways, ways that involve all of our platforms here. And this really is an extension of that. It fits into a bigger picture. This is not, you know, we didn't just decide one day, hey, let's do this. This really fits into a bigger plan. And I would say, you know, I know if you're listening now, you care about this show. You have been with the show probably for a long time, are deeply invested in its future. And I really appreciate that. And I hope that you'll be with us in January, that you'll be just as excited as we are come January when the show relaunches with that, you know, new face, that new permanent host, a new sense going forward of what's going to drive this for the next three decades at least. And tune in on Fridays. Fridays will be a chance to build and experiment and try things and give you a sense and again, a chance to talk to us about what you're hearing as we, again, experiment with some of these things. And let me end with this. You know, Lindsay mentioned Twitter before, and we did hear from somebody, a longtime listener on Twitter just the other day. You know, she said, okay, I understand what you're doing and this is going forward, and boy, does this really redefine TGIF for me. Thank yeah. goodness it's Friday. Every Friday, a new show. Tune in, tell us what you think, and we'll be here for you.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you so much for joining the show today, and good luck.
Thanks, Lisa.
You've been listening to Focus on WILL AM 580. I'm Lisa Braltz. Focus is produced by Lindsay Moon. Jason Croft is our technical director. Ryan Weber is our intern. Remember, Monday through Thursday during the 10 o'clock hour, starting next week, you'll hear NPR's Tell Me More, hosted by Michelle Martin. We'll be back next Friday. In the meantime, if you have questions or if you have comments about what you'd like to hear on the show in the future, email us at focus@illinois.edu. Thanks for joining us.